Have you ever realized that things sometimes just are not what they seem to be? And I don't know about you, but I go through Facebook and social media every once in a while, and you see something, and you think, can that possibly be true? But and one thing that frustrates me is all these people that take vacations all the time, you know? And you see a picture like this on Facebook, okay? There it is, right there. That's the picture, right? This is going splendidly so far today, isn't it? There we go. You know, yeah, and you see a picture like this, and you think, man, how can they be on vacation again? They were just on vacation, and I would like to be on the beach also, but not everything is exactly what it seems to be, because, you know, if you get behind the picture, this is actually what's going on, okay? Now, that's the kind of vacation that I can afford, okay? And I don't know if you know this, you know, you get this bit jealous, but if you knew what was going on behind the scenes, you know, maybe you wouldn't be so jealous. But the thing is, this is actually a thing. I don't know if you know this or not, but as I was researching this, there are actually people taking what they call fakecations. Isn't that weird? And here's another picture, okay? It looks like a beautiful airplane shot, but this is what it really is a picture of, okay? And we got another one. This is another one, you know. So not everything is exactly what it appears to be, okay? And so you have to kind of adjust. And this is kind of weird. And I guess it's gotten so bad that these influencers, if you will, have actually faked vacations. They fake being on private jets. They fake going on to all these exotic places. And there's this big uproar on the internet of these influencers not, you know, living the life that they're portraying online. And if you're sitting here and thinking, well, what is an influencer? Just count yourself lucky. Don't even research it. Don't get into that world. You're better off not knowing any of this that is going on out there. You're just better off not knowing any of this. But not everything is what it seems to be. And I think we've all lived this in some way or another. I can remember when our daughters would, be dating someone and they would break up with their boyfriend and they'd come home and they'd be all upset and crying and I would try to comfort them and give them a hug while all behind them I'm going, oh, thank you, Jesus. I am so thrilled that this happened. Oh, I'm so sorry. I am so happy about this whole thing, you know. And so today we're talking about something that is along those lines is that it just isn't necessarily how it seems to be. And a lot of times it's our relationship with God. And we have this idea about our relationship with God that we confuse our circumstances with how God is. That we confuse that when things are going great, when things are going good, when everything's on the up, up and up, we think, man, God is so good. But we get to a point where things aren't working out so well, life is kind of going south, and we think, well, God isn't very good. And when it gets really bad and when it gets really disappointing and we start getting crushed by what is going on with our circumstances, with the way that we are living our life or what's going on in our life, we start questioning, we start wondering, well, where is God in all of this? Maybe to the point that we actually say, well, maybe there isn't even a God. Or maybe even worse is that God hates me because of what I'm going through. And I think it's understandable because growing up, you know, I think a lot of us were taught that, you know, God is everywhere and he's behind everything and he's there and he's interacting with us daily, which is all absolutely true. But we get in our mind this mindset of that when things are going good, that's God, and when things is not, then he's upset with us or there's something wrong. We confuse our life experience with who we think God is. That when things are going south, you know, where is God in this tragedy? When things are going south, where is God in all of my hurt? Where is God in all of my suffering with all these things that I'm facing? And we start questioning, why is God allowing this to happen in my life? And so often, we as pastors, we've watched people go through these terrible circumstances, and they're real, and they're hurtful, and there's tragedies, and there's suffering. And we see people get to a point where they just say, give up on God, and they walk away. And it's crushing. Or maybe we even get to a point that you just, you know, maybe you're even thinking about walking away. You're tempted to walk away. And in the story we're going to unpack today, there's all kinds of things going on in this whole scenario that just, the things aren't what they seem to be. And today's bad boy, like I said, is a thief on the cross. And we don't even know his name. We don't know how old he was. We don't know a whole lot about him, but we know that he was sentenced to die. He was sentenced to be crucified, probably because he murdered somebody or did something really, really bad. And we have no idea what it is. He's condemned to die by crucifixion, which was horrifying in the day. It was basically a method of crucifying somebody to show everybody else this is not how you live your life. He would be put on display to show everybody that this is not the career choice that you want to make. That the only redeeming quality of this guy was that he would be crucified in a public forum so that people would say, I don't want to be like him. And he would die this humiliating, excruciating death, his body taken down and just taken out to the Gehenna, which was the garbage dump, the trash heap outside of town, and thrown there so that he would just rot there. That's the story of this guy behind us. He would be one of three men taken out to Golgotha that day to be crucified, Jesus being one of them. He'd be crucified with Jesus and another thief. And so we're going to be in Luke and Matthew at looking at this story and kind of unpacking it as we walk through this. And I want to remind you, we're going to be mostly in Luke today, but Luke was this physician. He was a very well-educated man. And he left all of that to follow Paul around and get these details of who Jesus actually is. He wanted to write this account of who Jesus was in the most accurate way that he possibly could. He says that he thoroughly investigated it. And he did this so that the people of the time and the people like you and I could read the story and read what he researched. And he talked to eyewitnesses and people who were actually there who saw and touched everything that was there, that he would write this account that we could trust in and that we could understand what has happened. So we'd have certainty of who Jesus actually was. So we're going to start in Luke chapter 23, verse 32. It says this: two others, both criminals, were led out to be executed with him, being Jesus. When they came to a place called the Skull, they nailed him to the cross. And the criminals were also crucified, one on his right and one on his left. And now we're going to jump to Matthew chapter 27 and get the same kind of detail here. Matthew 27, verse 35. It says, after they had nailed him to the cross, the soldiers gambled for his clothes by throwing dice. Then they sat around and kept guard as he hung there. A sign was fastened above Jesus' head announcing the charge against him. It read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two revolutionaries were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. The people passing by shouted abuse, shaking their heads in mockery. "Look at you now," they yelled at him. "You said you were going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Well, then, if you are the Son of God, save yourself and come down from the cross." Because right now, Jesus, it's not looking like you are who you said you were. You lived your life. You said all these things. You did all these things. And look at you now. Look where you are, Jesus. It can't be what you thought was going to happen. The leading priest, the teachers of religious law, and the elders also mocked Jesus. There was this gang up on what was happening here. "He saved others," they scoffed, "but he can't save himself. So he is the King of Israel, is he? Let him come down from the cross right now and we will believe in him." Listen to this. "He trusted God, so let God rescue him now if he wants him. You said all these things, Jesus, about God and how you trusted him and how he's going to come through. Ha, where is he now? What's happening with you here, Jesus? For he said, I am the Son of God." Even the revolutionaries who were crucified with him ridiculed him in the same way. So these two guys who are condemned to die also join in on everything that is happening on the ground of ridiculing Jesus. We're going to jump back to Luke chapter 23. It says, "The crowd watched and the leaders scoffed. He saved others, they said. Let him save himself if he is really God's Messiah." It keeps coming back to the same thing. You start getting the picture of what is happening here as Jesus is hanging on the cross. Everyone's against him. Everyone's ridiculing him. He said, if he is really God's Messiah, the chosen one. The soldiers mocked him too by offering him a drink of sour wine. They called out to him, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." A sign was fastened above him with these words, "This is the King of the Jews." And all of Jesus' claims are being used against him. They're basically saying, if you are who you say you are, if you are who you claim to be, then why in the world are you letting this happen to you? You have the power to come down. You have the power to end this whole thing. But yet for some reason, you are staying there. If you are the Son of God, if you are the Messiah, the one that we have been waiting for, look at you. It can't possibly be. And I was processing this story over the last few weeks. I had to start wondering, these two thieves that were next to him are also Jewish. They would have grown up in the Jewish tradition. They would have understood and heard all the stories of all the way back from Abraham and Moses. They would have understood all of the background that was leading up to this, and they would have certainly probably heard the stories of Jesus. They would have known he was a very famous rabbi at the time. He was known everywhere of this radical rabbi that was coming through, and maybe they even heard stories of him walking on the water, of healing the lame and healing the blind and raising people from the dead. Maybe they heard all those stories, and here they are watching him be crucified and trying to get it all together. And we heard that they both ridiculed him. But then all of a sudden, the tide starts to change with one of them, at least. The story continues in Luke 23:39. One of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, "So you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it." And so if he's got this picture of Jesus that maybe you are the Messiah, there's always something in it for us, isn't it? Hey, if you are the Messiah, prove it by getting yourself down and don't forget about us. Bring us too. Because sometimes we all get to that point, don't we? We use Jesus for our own needs, for what we want him for. And this thief is basically saying, where is God in the midst of all your suffering? Where is God in all of this? Why has God not shown up? What's happening here? If all this is happening, if you claim to be the Messiah, and God's not showing up and you're having to go through all this, maybe there really isn't a God. Your circumstances that you're in, Jesus, shows you that there is no God here. And then there's something that just is wild here in verse 40. As the other criminal was mocking him, verse 40 says, "But the other criminal protested, 'Don't you fear God even when you have been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong.' And then he said, 'Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom.' And Jesus replied, 'I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise.'" The same thief who moments ago was ridiculing Jesus, who was joining in with everything that was happening on the ground around him, with the religious leaders, with the other people who were mocking him and berating him. And something has changed with his attitude about who this Jesus was. And I think we have the answer to what changed him actually in the story here. I think it was the actual words of Jesus in verse 34 when Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." Jesus's posture in the most unbearable, unbelievable circumstances, the most awful circumstances you can imagine. There's nothing worse than this. He's being humiliated on the cross. He's being mocked. But his posture is one of, "It's not about me. Father, would you forgive all of them, because they don't understand. They don't know what they are doing." He doesn't think of himself in this moment, but he thinks of others. And this thief has got to be sitting here in pain himself and looking at Jesus and what his posture is and how he's handling all this and what he's going through. And how can he possibly forgive the people who have done this horrible thing to him? In the midst of your suffering, Jesus, how can you not let it affect who God is to you? In all of your suffering, how can you not abandon this God who is letting you go through all of this? And Jesus' posture is, even if I'm going to go through the most horrible thing there is, I will not abandon God. An unbelievable scene at this point. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up, and we're going to take communion together as a family here just in a few moments. But this thief in this moment, he realizes that Jesus must be exactly who he says he is. That he is, no matter what the circumstances are happening around him, he must be this person. He must be the king, just like the sign says, he is the king of the Jews. And that he is ushering this brand new kingdom that we have no way of understanding. That there's something so different here that we can't grasp it. He is the Messiah, just like he is being mocked. And he must be innocent, because everything is not what it seems to be here. It seems for everyone around here that Jesus is not the Messiah because of what he's going through. That God is not going to come through all the shouting, through all the pain, through all the anger, the suffering, the hate, the mocking, the tragedy, the injustice. In a moment of clarity, this thief sees who Jesus actually is. And he makes a request. And Jesus, in his last conversation before he leaves this earth, before he dies, to a man deserving death, forgives him. In a time when it seems like God just isn't there, in a time for this person, this thief, it seems like he doesn't stand a chance, that there's no hope for him because of the life that he has lived. And he has this simple request: Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And I read somewhere this week that it's the only time in Scripture that someone addresses Jesus by his first name. And so I went searching for that, and I couldn't find any place else. But here's this thief who, if you look at his life, you would say that he has no business talking to this Jesus. But he calls him by his first name. And Jesus responds. He didn't have the time to clean up his act. He didn't have his time to get his life straight. But he sees Jesus for who he is, and he asks him, Jesus, remember me. And Jesus forgives him, because things are not always what they seem to be. The disciples thought it was all over. The Pharisees, the haters, the mockers, all the people who were just trashing on Jesus thought it was all over, that they'd finally gotten rid of this troublemaker. But it wasn't over. And I have to think about our own lives at times like this. Because I think sometimes we go through stuff and we just wonder where God is, and that he's not going to come through. And I want you to know, and we know, that we have all kinds of families here that are going through some really, really hard stuff. Some things that would make anybody quit. I would want to quit what they're going through. And there's many of you maybe facing those kind of circumstances today. And you're wondering where God is. And you're wondering why he hasn't shown up. The circumstance you're facing doesn't mean that God doesn't love you and that God doesn't see you. He does. And I'm begging you, don't give up. Don't give up hope, because he's still there. And we may not understand it, but he's there. And maybe you don't have the faith, and you don't have the courage, and you don't have the strength to hold on. And I would just implore you to come get other people around you that does have the faith when you don't have it, to hold you up, to support you, to come alongside. And we get it, and we see you, and we know you. And so we're going to take communion as a family together. Maybe you've never decided to say, you know what, I want to follow Jesus. Maybe this is your time through this Holy Week. As you understand what Jesus paid the price for you, he took all of your sins, everything you've ever done wrong, everything you ever will do wrong, and he paid the price for you. He stepped in just like we talked about last week for Barabbas. He took Barabbas' cross. He took your cross also. He took my cross. And it's just as simple as saying, Jesus, I give you my life. I want to follow you. Maybe that's your prayer as you come and get communion. For anyone else, here's what I would challenge you to do and I would ask you to do. I would ask you just to remember other people who are suffering right now in their life. The things that they're facing, the things that they're going through, it's so hard, and we don't want them to give up. Would you pray for them as you come and get the elements today? Would you pray for their peace? Would you pray for their comfort? Would you pray that they would see Jesus, they would see God in the worst of the circumstances that they are facing? So as the band comes up and plays, as the worship team comes up and plays, would you mind just coming up and getting the bread and getting the juice, take back your seats, and we'll take communion together in just a few minutes.